Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, one of the rare occasions where we start precisely right at the top of the daf, is Daf Kuf Yud. And we are continuing on with our favorite Piskei Halachos of Admon. So, out of Admon 7, we've already got Admon's top 3, where, of course, we have Rabbi Gamliel agreeing with him. We went ahead to the next 2, where he wasn't supported by Rabbi Gamliel. And we are now ready to go for Admon 6. Okay, who's ready to put in a vote for Admon 6? Let's go, guys. Where we go? Anybody interested? All right, yeah, there we go. Okay, very good. So, number 6 of Admon. Hamotzi shtar chov chaveiro. V'hala otzi shemachar lo et hasadeh. So now the question is like this. Somebody's got a shtar, but the other guy, who was supposedly the borrower, he shows that after the date of that shtar, when he supposedly had already owed him the money, that the supposed lender sold him a field. And now he's coming and claiming that he owes him money. So Admon Omer, the borrower should say, this is a piece of garbage, your contract against me that I owe you money. Because either it's a forgery, or you could say, I paid it off. Because if it were actually a valid contract, so then if I had money to go buy a field, you should have grabbed that money and instead of giving me your field. It's ridiculous. If I owed you the money, why would you sell a field for the same money that you could have taken? So therefore, it's clear that this is a phony shtar. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, actually, the guy can say, he could say, I'll tell you what was going on over here. This guy claimed he didn't have a cent. Took all of his money out of his bank accounts. There was no way I could collect from him. So I figure, okay, you know what? You don't have any money. How about if I sell you a field? Oh, for that, all of a sudden you have money. Okay, fine. So I sell you the field. I can go collect the field. But at least this way, we get out the issue of whether I have what to collect from. So Zaya Pikeach, Shemachar lo et hakarka, by selling him the land, he can now go and he's able to be mamashkin it against his money. Whereas like this, I would have nothing to do. So there's always going to be able to hide a field that he owns. So I'm always going to be able to go ahead and collect it. Now explain to me what is really the Rabbanan saying. Admon is absolutely right. If the guy is taking out money and this person now could grab that money, why in the world should he be written him out a bill of sale on a piece of property if he's got the money anyway? So now you need to understand a couple of very important points, don't you? What happens in terms of a sale in that area? Do we go to some type of lawyer where the guy keeps the money? Or no. If we're talking about a place where people, they first take out the money, give over the money, and then the other person, the Edom are there, the other person writes the shtar at that point. So then everybody would agree that then he can say, look, if you first gave the money, then why don't you just keep the money and then explain to the Edom that you're not going to write out the shtar because this money is your money that's owed. And there's no problem because there wouldn't have been a sale if you didn't write out the shtar. Okay, so that makes no sense. There'd be no machlokas over there. Admon would be 100% correct. Where the machlokas is, in a place where first you have to write out the shtar, the Edom sign, and then in that particular meeting, you then give over the money when he gives over the shtar. So over there, Admon says, look, if that was the case, I understand that you had to write the shtar in order to get the cash. I understand that. But why didn't you tell the Edom that are signed on the shtar? You should have been Moser Moda'an. You should have said, listen, Edom, I'm only signing the shtar because otherwise the guy is hiding his cash and I have no way of ever getting my loan back. So therefore, I'm going to pretend that this is a valid sale because I need to get his money uncovered. Otherwise, he keeps claiming he doesn't have any money. And since he didn't write a moda'ah, So then, obviously, it's a lie. And the star that he's got, that the other person owes him money, it must be, it was either a forgery or it was already paid. Whereas the Rabbanan say, no, not true. Because Chavrach, as we saw before, Chavrach, Chavrach, Itle, Chavrach, 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 Itle. The reason that I cannot afford to be Moser Moda'a is because I'm worried that these witnesses are going to talk to their wife or whatever. They'll say it to one guy, but it'll constantly get out. And then the guy will say, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't have any cash to buy your field. And there goes the whole deal. So this was my big opportunity to be able at least to get my cash. And I can go back and I can collect the field for my loan. Okay. That would explain whether we need to be chayish. Do we have a right to say, I don't want to be meiser meidah because of chavra chavra itlay or not? So that ends up being the machlokas between Admon and the Rabbona. And Tosus is mechalek, where it is that everybody seems to agree that we're worried about chavra chavra itlay, and that he has a right not to write a moda'ah, and over here where it's a machloket. Okay, we're now ready for Sir Richard.
Yes, sir, Rabbi.
169 for Richie.
169?
And this is the final, amazing, number 7 of Admon. Here we go. Shnayim shotziu shtarchov ze al ze. Okay, we've got two people. They both have claims of a contractual loan that each one claims he made to the other one. All right, so let's say Reuven walks in. He says, Shimon owes me money. And Shimon says, yeah, right. Takes out a shtar and it says, Reuven owes Shimon money. So what happens in the case? We'll talk about, obviously, exactly what the case is, because it's clearly going to make a difference how much money. It's going to difference what type of land you have to collect from. It's going to make a difference when the loan was due. It's going to make a difference whether one side is the actual Balchov and the other side are Yatomim, not the actual Balchov. So we've got to clear up exactly the details, obviously, but we'll wait for the Gemara to do that. So Admon says that Shimon can tell Reuven, I mean, come on, if this were a real shtar and it hadn't been paid up or it's not forgery, how do you explain the fact that if I am chayav money to you, instead of having me pay you the money that I owe you, you borrowed money from me? I mean, that's a little ridiculous, isn't it? You turn yourself into a borrower where you could simply have taken the money and said, thanks, Shim, here's the money that you owed me anyway. Whereas the Chachamim say, look, each one collects, you know? It's not that we even cancel the debts. We don't cancel one debt against the other. Each one goes into court and collects property from the other person. It's weird. Okay. So what are we talking about? So Itmar. So first, we have a general machlokas amoroi. Shnayim shotziu shtarchov ze al ze. So what do we do in cases that seem to be the exact case that we have in the Mishnah? We've got, let's say, somebody, let's say Reuven lends $1,000 to Shimon in Nisan. And then Reuven borrows $1,000 from Shimon in Iyar. Now, both of these contracts now are payable. The loans are up, whatever. They were 30-day loans. And obviously, neither of them has cash because then there's nothing to discuss, because then you could just go round and round in circles. We're not going to do that. We're talking about over here where we have only karka. So now the question is, what would be the din over there? And we're not talking about over here where he's arguing. That's not the case in the Mishnah. The case in the Mishnah, he's saying, this is a fake contract. There's no argument it's a fake contract. Over here, we're talking about that they both admit to it, right? The question is there any point in collecting one guy's karka to the other? Or do we just say, okay, forget about it? So here's the machlokas. Now, it's not directly nogeya the Mishnah, that means at this point, right? So Reb Nachman says, each one goes to court and collects the other's property. And we don't just cancel one against the other. Whereas Reb Sheshet says, I don't understand what the point is in doing such nonsense. Let's say a guy had two shoulder bags, one on his right shoulder, one on his left shoulder, identical manufacturers of the shoulder bag with precisely the same contents in one and the other. And the guy is feeling, oh gosh, you know, my shoulder's really hurting. You really think that it's going to be a brilliant idea to switch shoulder bags? What would be the point? That's exactly the same shoulder bag. So I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, all that we're doing is flipping our shoulder bags, right? So hafuche matarta lamali, why flip your shoulder bags? That makes no sense. You know, Zell made bishalo, Zell made bishalo. I mean, both are admitting that these are appropriate shtarot. Nobody's claiming it's a fake. Nobody's claiming it was paid. The only issue is whether we're going to collect from each one separately. What would be the crazy point in doing such a thing? All right, so now we have to understand what the case is, because otherwise it really is ridiculous. So here's the point. The point over here, remember, revolves around the issue of a Baal Chov and what he's allowed to collect in terms of land. The halacha is, as you recall, that whereas a ketuvah is always collected from lowest quality land, and that was part of the kulas of ketuvah, the normal halacha is that a Baal Chov is able to collect from Beinonit land. Now, again, the amount of money that you're collecting obviously is always the same. The question is the quality of land and the ease with which this land can be converted into cash. And in a case where you cause damage, remember, as we saw before, you always are able to collect in Meitav. Meitav means in Idit, in the very best. Okay, that's number one. Now, you can easily see where if we're going to allow each party to collect from the other party, there may be cases in which one comes out ahead of what he would have had before, because he may be able to collect land that's of higher quality than the land that he had to collect from. Now, how exactly the case works out, that we'll have to work on the details. But anyway, that's number one. But before we get into that issue, we need to define what we mean by Ziburit, Beinonit, and Idit. Do we mean in terms of the individual who owns the land? So that if I have a right to take Idit, it means I could take his best land? Does it mean that it's defined by a universal or objective category in which we have three qualities of land, and my particular Idit might be somebody else's Ziburit? That's the issue, because if it's defined by what I have, and this is a crummy piece of land, but it's the best I have, then if you would be a Baal Chov against me, you would not be able to collect my crummy land because it's my best. You'd have to collect my crummy land because that's my medium land. You say, but I don't even own any land that is this poor. Well, that's tough, because if it's going to be defined by the individual, and each person has high quality, his high quality relative to his middle quality relative to his lower quality. That's the question. Is this a relative discussion or is it an objective standard discussion? And that's going to make tremendous differences in what it is that will be collected. Taking that into consideration, now let's take a look at the case. So obviously, Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes are not going to be arguing. We're both own the same type of land. I mean, that's ridiculous. The Kulei Alma, if they both have Idit, or if they both have Beinonit, or they both have Ziburit. Now, listen, Rabosa, in order not to get confused, you have to get one idea very clear. When we refer to what people have, we are not referring to the halachic description of the land. We are referring to the market's description of the land. When we're referring to what you can collect, then we're referring to the halachic description. And then it kicks in whether it's a determination relative to the person or whether it's objective. But for sure, in a statement like this, if both have Idit, that doesn't mean if both have a best quality land relative to their own, obviously. It means if both have Idit, marketplace Idit, or both have Beinonit, or both have Ziburit. then everybody understands. It's insane. I mean, why would I want to switch my shoulder bag? So vadei hafuchei matartahu, and nobody would disagree. Of course, we just leave things. You're both agreeing you owe each other the same amount of money. So what are you doing in court? So that's not a question. Where do we have a machlokas? Where one of them has beinonit land and one of them has ziburit land. So Reb Nachman is saying, look, it's therefore meaningful for each one of them to be gove, because one of them is going to be going to court in order to come out ahead. Why? Because Reb Nachman says, since we consider the quality of land as a local relative to my other land issue, and that is called, Gavi, bishalo hein shamin, that we consider the definition of properties in terms of his own properties. So Reb Nachman says, since bishalo hein shamin, so then imagine a case like this. One guy has ziburit, and he comes and he sues the other guy, and he takes that other guy's beinonit. But that beinonit then turns into edit once he collected it, because it's his edit. And now when the other guy sues him, he can't take that piece of property back, because he's not allowed to collect from edit. He can only collect from beinonit. The guy doesn't have beinonit. Okay, so what? But you can't go beyond. You can't go and collect edit when you only have a right to collect beinonit. And therefore, since what was once my field of universal status of beinonit, in this case, for this guy, represents his best land, I can't take his best land because b'shaloim gavim. And therefore, I end up, the other guy ends up ahead because he took my middle quality land and I'm stuck now with ziburit because I can't go back and take it from him, right? So atahu v'shakil ziburit. So therefore, says Reb Nachman, they can certainly, it's understandable that one of them is going to be suing the other one, and that way he ends up ahead. Reb Shesha says, no, he doesn't end up ahead. All you're doing is switching shoulder bags. Why? Gavi, this is the other opinion. B'shal kol adam ein shamim. B'shal kol adam ein shamim means that we define the nature of ziburit and beinonit and idit in terms of an objective quality of land that the marketplace recognizes. And therefore, since that's true, in the case where the Reuven goes ahead and collected the beinonit, the other guy is going to go back and take it right back from him. Because even though it's his edit now, that's irrelevant. It still is, objectively speaking, beinonit land. As a matter of fact, happens to be the same field he just collected from me. Well, I'm going to go and take it back from him because it's still beinonit. I don't care what it is to him, but objectively, it's beinonit. So I'll take my own field back. In which case, what is the point of switching the shoulder bags? Because Benoni Denavshe Kashaka is going to end up taking his own field back. So asks the Gemara, but wait a minute. Even if you hold, as Reb Nachman does, even if you hold that we go according to Bishalohin Shamin, the only way that it worked out that one party walks off with a better land than he had is if that party was the one that collected first, right? I mean, if we talked about a case where Reuven collected first, and why in the world, why would we say that the owner, Reuven, who only had crummy land, he went ahead and he collected beinonis from Shimon, and therefore he comes out ahead. Why did we let him collect first? Why don't we say that Shimon collects first and takes ziburis, and then when Reuven comes to collect, he will only be able to take that ziburis back because the other property is edis. So what's the issue? I don't get it. I mean, it's all very arbitrary. Well, it's talking about over here, the case in the Machlokas between Reb Sheshes and Reb Nachman is talking about where the guy who owns the crummy land, he was the first one into court to sue. So what? I don't care who came first into court. They're coming now to collect. The court is expected to issue a psak in a case where two people claim the same thing. A owes B, B owes A, and they're not arguing about that. So who cares who came first into court if we need to deal with the situation in a holistic fashion, obviously, in the end. So why in the world would the Besdin say, let's work it out in such a way that one of them walks off with better quality? Why should we do that? Why doesn't the Besdin just say, look, since there's no need for there to be any kind of changes due to this din, so then, afuche matar talamali, why are we running around in circles? That's what I want to know. Okay, very good point. So there, how do we explain now that we've got a machlokas between Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes? So this is no good, right? Bechora, because so sof kiatu lamigbe b'ari adade ka'at. So let's explain, therefore, in a different case. Where would it work out that it really does make a difference? Ela lo tzricha, de'idle lechad idit ubeinit, de'idle lechad ziburit. So maybe the case over here is a guy owns the highest quality land. Again, here we're talking about what is owned in terms of marketplace, right? So one of them has very high quality and medium quality, and the other one has very poor land. So now, Reb Nachman holds that we go according to Bishalohin Shami, and Mar Savar Reb Sheshes holds that we go according to Kol Adam in Shamim. So we look at it objectively. So in this case, according to Reb Sheshes, if Reuven, let's say, is the first one that's going to be Govet. So what's he going to do? He's going to take Beninis. But then when Shimon collects, he's going to take the same Beninis back. Because after all, we go according to the objective quality, right? That's what Reb Sheshes holds. So what's the point? He'll take back the same bane in his field that Reuven collected. I don't care, therefore, who goes first. And in this case, what are we going to say? Let Shimon collect first and therefore give Reuven a better situation. But we said that we don't do that. Because, I mean, what would be the point? If we can allow things to be exactly the way they were, why would the Besdin set things up for people to create a situation where we would artificially collect the Beninis first to allow him to come out with it ahead? That's not the way we do things. It's not fair. Okay? So now we understand the machlokas. Now, let's take a look at the Mishnah and see whether these things have anything to do with the Mishnah. In the case of the Mishnah, the Chachomim say, you don't have a raya that the loan is not a loan. Okay? So that means, according to Chachamim, what's the deal? Both of them are going to collect. And guess what? The Chachamim say both of them do collect. Now, wait a minute. Reb Sheshes says both of them don't collect because what would be the point of swapping your shoulder bags? So I don't understand. According to the Chachamim, what we're talking about is basically the machlokas between Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes. And the Chachamim say in the Mishnah of the Farish, they both press their claims in court. We don't cancel their claim. Oh, but that only works out according to Reb Nachman. So what's Reb Sheshes going to do with the Mishnah? Says Reb Nachman, now wait a minute, gentlemen, let's not jump to conclusions. I'm very grateful that you want to bring a riot to me from the Mishnah, but I can explain the Mishnah according to Reb Sheshes. So Tirgama Reb Sheshes, Reb Nachman, I'll leave it to Reb Sheshes. The situation over here is not talking about just a question of the level of properties. Get that out of your head. You know, it's all prejudice. You haven't discussed the other question, and that is, when is the loan due? Okay, nobody's talked about that problem. Well, that is the important issue in the Mishnah. Let's imagine a case where one of the loans was for a long-term loan, and one of them was for a short-term loan, right? So then since they're not due at the same time, obviously they can't cancel one another out. So let's not have this have anything to do with my machlokas with Reb Sheshes. Here we're going to involve a completely different issue. Okay, sounds a little bit complicated. Could you explain the Mishnah, please, Reb Nachman? I mean, are you trying to tell me that, let's say, the first guy borrowed for 10 years and the second guy borrows for 5 years? I mean, so then how would Admon possibly have said, well, if I actually owed you the money, so then why were you coming to borrow money? What do you mean? Why was I coming to borrow money? I wasn't able to collect until 10 years have passed. So I couldn't ask you to pay me, could I? So what are you going to say? Yeah, but you could have said, oh, you've got money to lend me. I'll keep that money. Of course I wouldn't do that because I have a loan for 10 years. If I'm going to collect this now, and then I'm going to lose the right for my other, I've still got 5 years left on this loan. I want to be able to use that money. So of course I'm not going to do that, right? So in other words, let's imagine Shimon borrows 10 years. Reuven comes back and borrows for 5 years. Now, so let's say he's a year into his 10 years, right? Now he borrows for 5 years. Okay, so he says, so what are you telling me? What are you telling me? They'll say to Admon, what should I have done? I should have taken back the money? Of course, I don't want to take back the money because then I won't get the use of all of this time. I've got 9 years left of use on it. So therefore, it makes much more sense for me to actually borrow the money. So therefore, I made that loan. I want to borrow from Shimon because I have no way of getting the money out of Shimon. So I have no choice but to borrow the money. That's the point. So you're saying to me, okay, so we could have prepaid it. I don't want to prepay it. So why would Admon have said, if I was chayev to you, how come you borrowed money from me? Well, what do you mean? I borrowed money from you because the loan wasn't due yet. I couldn't sue you for the payment, and I didn't want to take the money that you were lending me as payment. So therefore, halomata zimne. So I couldn't have collected that at all, because what would be the point? I had no choice. So that can't be the case. Okay, so let's reverse. So the first case, Shimon comes and he borrows for 5 years. And now he, after borrowing for 5 years, Reuven comes along and he borrows from him for 10 years. So originally, Reuven lent the money for 5 years. And now the 5 years are up. And he goes back and he borrows for 10 years. And now, let's say a couple of years later, Reuven is claiming, what about the original 5 years? You never paid me that. So the Rabbanan say, okay, that's a good taina. So therefore, we're going to make Shimon pay right now. Reuven only has to pay Shimon when the next 4 years are up, when the end of the 10 years. So therefore, it makes absolutely no nafkamina. I can't. The truth is that the amount of time doesn't really seem to matter. What's important is which loan was due, not which one was for a longer time. But we just make the longer time because it makes it easier to remember. Okay. So the important thing is that I borrowed money afterwards. Okay. So now explain to me which loan was due. I need to understand what precisely happened. If the first loan was already due, before Reuven takes out another loan, so then Admon is absolutely right. I mean, how could the Rabbanan say, well, what's the problem? Why would it be a bad shtar? What do you mean? Why would it be a big bad shtar? If it's a good shtar, so once it was already due, instead of Reuven asking to borrow money, why didn't he simply collect money? Doesn't make any sense. So the Rabbanan wouldn't have argued in that case. And if it's talking about that the loan wasn't due, so then how could Admon have possibly said, well, why did you borrow money if you could have collected for a loan that was due? So I don't understand how you're explaining the Mishnah, Reb Nachman. It doesn't make sense at all. My time at Admon. Ah, so we're forced to say that the only way it could work out is it's exactly the last day of the loan. Let's say the loan was payable at the end of 5 years. And now Reuven comes along. He can't say, pay me, because Shimon will say, well, I don't owe you the money till tomorrow. So he says, look, I'm in desperate need of the money today. If I don't pay off my mortgage today, then I'm going to end up losing my house. How about if you lend me the money for a day? Okay, I'll lend you the money. So this is gufa the machlokas. Lo tzricha da'ata ba'hu yom de mishlam chamesh. So the Rabbanan hold, look, there can be situations where somebody is desperate enough that he needs to borrow money, even though tomorrow he's got a lot of money coming in. Everybody knows this problem of getting caught with liquidity problems. And what can you do? You know, it's, you'll have to put it on a credit card and pay the charges and whatever. There's no choice in the matter. Whereas Admon says, that's crazy. You'll manage to find a situation, but why in the world would somebody go through all the legalities and costs of taking out a loan and turning himself into a borrower for one day? You'll manage for one day. So lo avininish the yaziv liyume. Maybe that's good for the machlokas. Rami Bar Chama says, I don't know, that's pretty weird that the Mishnah is talking about a case where specifically on the last day of the, I don't know. I would say like this, the way that we can make Rav Sheshes work out in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is saying it's kedai for each one of them to go to court and each one collects separately. You know what it's talking about over here in the Mishnah? It's talking about where one of them died. And now it's the Yitomim that are coming to collect. And that makes a big difference because, you see, Yitomim are always able to collect a loan that their father made to someone, but they cannot be collected from by a loan that someone made to their father unless he left them property. And we're talking about over here where he didn't leave them property. And therefore, agbuya lo magmina minayu. So since the loans don't cancel, because only one party has the right to collect, that's why it says it's kedai to go to court. Says the Gemara to Rami Bar Chama, what's the matter with you? The Mishnah says they both go to court to collect. Zegove vezegove. And your brilliant solution is to say only one of them can collect. Come on, man. It says before, zegove vezegove. Yeah, says Rami Bar Chama. You know what that means? It means both of them press their case, but only one, and they both theoretically could collect, but there's nothing to collect from the Yitomim, so he doesn't practically collect. So it means theoretically, zegove vezeraui ligvot, but he can't, because there's nothing there to collect from. Oh, says Rava, a brilliant answer. And I only have a couple of small problems with your brilliant answer. First of all, the Mishnah says, Zegovev is a govev. Okay, you know how to read? Don't give me this stuff Zegovev means. Well, theoretically, it could be govev. That's not what the words Zegovev mean. That's my first little problem, which, of course, is always Rava's taina. He doesn't like people getting away with playing around with words that have a plain meaning, and then you start changing the meaning on me. There you go, Akiva. Hello. Knock out the competition. Even Gavi and Yoyada Kohen are in this. So, man, I think we're ahead of the game. This time, Barnea, this time, Yoyada HaKohen, you're not going to argue with, right? Okay, that's out of your league. Okay, very good. So that's my first little problem, says Rava. And my second problem is a killer of a problem, okay? They both come to collect, all right? So let's imagine you're saying, well, you can't collect from the Yitomim because the father didn't leave any property. Okay, great. So now the Yitomim collect. What do they collect? They collect property. Ah, but once Yitomim collect property that was due for a father's debt, then you can collect that property from them because that's considered to be property that their father left them. So therefore, you're back where you started from because Ligvinu Arliyat. Let's let them to collect. Sure, go right ahead and collect. And then we'll go back for the other guy and we'll collect it out of their hides because that's what Reb Nachman himself says. The Omer Reb Nachman, Omer Rabba Baravua, Yitomim Shegavu Karka Bechovat Avihem, now the property that they collected is basically property that their father left them because they only had a right to collect it because of the kayak of the loan that was due the father. So now that means that our father left us this property. Okay, so then we can go back and collect it. Kasha, well, that is a problem for Rami Bar Chama. So I said, Gemara, but wait a minute. I mean, there is still an answer. Even with this, we could say that maybe the point is like this, that the Mishnah would be talking about a case where the Yatomim have Ziburit land, right? And the other one, who's not Yatomim, he's still alive, he has Idit and Beinonit. Now, the Yatomim go, and they're going to collect Beinonit. So you'll say, okay, so if they collected Beinonit, we could collect the Beinonit from them. No, that's the kunz of Rami Bar Chama, because the halacha is that even if normally you would hold that b'shel kol adam ein shamin, normally you say we go after the objective determination of the value of land, that does not apply in the case of nichse yitomim, because you can never collect from yitomim except from their lowest quality. That's one of the ways we protect yitomim, in which case it would still make sense, and therefore Rami Bar Chama can work it out, that if, in addition to all the other issues, we throw in the fact that there were different types of properties, then it would make sense to say in the Mishnah, Zegoveh v'Zegoveh, dafka because they're Yatomim. So you see, Rami made more sense than you thought, Rava. No, says Rava, doesn't make any sense at all. Because the only time that we say a thing like that, that we will collect only from the Ziburit, that's only in a case where the other person did not already do a tfisa on the better quality land, you see. But in a case where he did, then he did. Now, in this case, he did. Why did he? Because he already has it, silly. You're trying to take away his karka. And he's saying, but they owe me this karka. So what are you telling me to do? Give them this karka so that I can get screwed and only collect their lowest karka? No. I already have this karka. Why should I give it to them? So that's the equivalent of tfisa, you see? And therefore, there is no din when it comes to yatomim that if the other person was already tofetz the karka, which over here he's sitting in this karka for the past 5 years. I mean, why in the world should he hand it over to them? So he was tofetz his own karka. Thank you very much. And therefore, we're back to the problem. You have not explained Rami at all. So we still have our problems with it. And that brings us up to Sir Richard.
170.
Well, we're moving on now to a brilliant and amazing smashing closing of a sugya in our Masechet. And for some reason, we are now moving on to the issues of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the rights of people to insist on making aliyah, the question of quality of life, and the interrelationship of the quality of life to the quality of the Kedusha, and all very, very important contemporary issues, and the issue of the relationship of quality of life to the question of my ability to have access to visiting my family where my parents live, and I can't go to a place where my parents don't live, and what are the assumptions about who follows whom in cases of marriage. All of these issues now, for some reason, at the end of the Masechet, come due so that we can understand the interrelationships in terms of day-to-day living. So our first Mishnah to deal with this issue points out that in terms of the simple geopolitical realities, there are three separate areas in Eretz Yisrael in which it is difficult to travel from one to the other. And that if you're going to settle in one of them, then you won't have easy access to the other, either because of passport control problems or because of simple communication issues, whatever the issue is. And that is, there are three areas, separate aratzot, when it comes to determining who follows whom in marriage. So if you marry a woman in one of these areas, you cannot force her to move to another, because she could claim, I'm never going to be able to go visit my family. Sounds familiar? Absolutely. So what happens over here is these three areas are at that time, Yehuda, Eber HaYarden, VeHaGalil. So, Ein Motziim Me'ir La'ir, you cannot move even from the same type of lifestyle. Now, lifestyle is one issue. The other question is quality of life. And that has to do with what type of circumstances, what type of house is it, and so on. But lifestyle has to do, is it country living? Is it city living? Or is it town living? Now, those are all very different. So you cannot even move from an equivalent lifestyle. Let's say you're currently living in a small town. You can't go to a small town in another one of these areas. You can't move from one city. A krach is a busy town, not a town. Let's call it a city. You cannot go even from one town to another, or from one city to another. But if you're in the same one of these aratzot, so let's say you live in the Galil, and so now you want to move to another town in the Galil, or you're living in a city in the Galil, and you want to move to another city in the Galil. Now there you can move, the husband can move from one to the other, and his wife, if she doesn't want to move, will have to accept a get. But you cannot insist on moving to a different lifestyle. You cannot move from a town to a city or from a city to a town. Either way, but you can change quality of life and you can move to a better home. And she can't say, I like having a lower quality home if you want to take to a better home, but you cannot take her from a quality of life that is higher, from a Nava HaYafeh, to a quality of life that is lower. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, either way, you can't change it. Even from a low quality of life to a high quality of life, you have no idea of the stress that a higher life quality puts on people, and she has a right to refuse to go even up in life quality. Mipnei she'anava HaYafeh bodek. It is going to be a test against your health. Okay, says the city. Now, I understand why a wife doesn't have to follow a guy from a city to a town. I mean, she could say, heck, there's no Walmart around here. How am I going to be able to buy anything? I need to go back to the city where everything is available. I mean, listen, in the big city, I've got myself a concert hall. I got myself a Walmart. I mean, I can't live in this little town. Fine. So a ear, that's a city there, a town. In a town, you don't get whatever you need. And so I want to be in a big city. But why the other way around does not she have to move from a town where it's not as convenient to a big city where there's a Walmart? That is a riot to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Charimina says, listen, in terms of environmental stress, we could prove to you from a pasuk that you have a right to claim environmental stress in living in a city where, as Rashi says, everybody's piled one up against the other. There's no air. There's no green spaces. You can't stand having that type of lifestyle. That is considered to be stress, and I'll prove it to you from a pasuk. What's the pasuk? Minayji Shivat Krachim Kasha. Where do we see that it is a challenge to live in a big city? Shenema Vayivarchu Am Lachola Anashim Mitnadvim Lashevet BiYerushalayim. Can you imagine? They all had to give a special bracha to support people who volunteered to live in Yerushalayim. But you got to volunteer to live in Yerushalayim. Oh man, big steps and little steps. Who wants big steps and little steps? I like to just walk. I like to breathe. So who can live in the old city? That's exactly the point. So you need a special bracha for those people who are willing to continue hanging out, as our dear Barnea and Bobby over here and Daniel. You know, they got a tough lifestyle, but what can you do? The noise, the green spaces, the crowds, the tourists. It goes all the way back to the time of Ezra. And the only thing you could be, and the high rents, The only thing you could be claiming is, all right, where is the support extended by the Ezra bills? That's the only question that you can ask. But we do have support for your pain.
Okay. And Rebbe eventually got out. It wasn't a simple thing, the sugya.
You have to get burned out. Okay, so that explains this. Now, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, you can't even ask your wife to move from a low quality life to a high quality life by giving her a better home. Why? Because it's bodek. What does that mean? How is it bad for you? Like Shmuel says. Shmuel says, Shinui veset techilat chole me'ayim. Let me tell you something. You move to a higher quality of life. Guess what that means? That means French food. That means French bread from across the street, especially when Alon comes to visit. That means that before you know it, your diet is going to murder you. And therefore, Shmuel says, Shinui veset trilat chole me'ayim. You start changing your diet. That's the beginning of the end for your tummy. And basically, all of these changes, they're going to show up and they're going to, anything that's weak in you, that's called bodek. It's going to come out. And therefore, she can say, listen, I'm happy where I am. And my body is used to being where I am. Please. My mommy never had a dishwasher. I don't want a dishwasher. I never understood it, but what can you do? The Mishnah backs it up. And another raya to Shmuel is Ben Sira. Every once in a while, we'll quote Ben Sira. Now, Ben Sira himself quotes Mishlei, of course. So Ben Sira writes, Kol Yemei Ani Ra'im. Now, that's just a straight out pasuk in Mishlei. I mean, surely Ben Sira is not into stealing sukkim from Mishlei. But he adds, so he writes like this. First, he quotes, Kol Yemei Ani Ra'im. So let's, before we tell you what he has to add, what is the meaning of Kol Yemei Ani Ra'im? I mean, Shabbos, Yontav, is considered to be bad. I mean, even the poor are given all the things that they need for Shabbos and Yontav. So Ika Shabbatot V'yamim Tovim. So why are you telling me that all the days of the poor are bad? Because Shabbos and Yontav is bad for them. Because on Shabbos and Yontav, they have to eat cholent. Or they have to eat good food. But their stomach doesn't know how to handle good food. So what happens? Shabbos and Yontav, now they get sick or they spend the day in the bathroom. Forget about it. Kol Yemei Ani Ra'im. That's a riot to Shmuel. There's nothing you can do. Okay, anyway, but meanwhile, back after Shmuel pointed out, Shinui Veset Chilat Chole Me'ayim, Ben Sira says, I want to add to Shlomo's words, because I don't think he covered the situation. It's much worse than he writes. He says, all the days of the Ani. And I say, and what about the nights? The nights are terrible for an Ani too. How come he left out the nights? Bishval Gagim Gago. Look, where do you think he lives? He lives at the bottom of the valley where every other roof has all the runoff going onto his roof. So whose roof do you think is going to leak? Whose roof do you think is going to be pounding at night? Huh? It's not the guys in Tzvat. It's the guys living at the bottom of the valley. I wonder who that would be. So all the rain is going to come down on their roofs. And then if he's got any kind of land, you know where his land is? All the way on top of the mountain. He's got to trudge up 20 miles. But guess what happens when it rains? All of his topsoil is washed down to the rich people who have the nice place down in the valley. Okay. So Mimitar, he's got Bimaroma Rim Karmo. See, he's got his trees at the top of the mountain, which means that all the rain in the entire area is coming onto his roof. Mimtar Gagim Le Gago. And all of the good topsoil from all over is going to everybody else's kerem. Umiyafar karmo lakaramim. And now the question is, you haven't taken into consideration moving from Chutzlaretz to Eretz Yisrael. How about forcing your family to make aliyah? For this, we must turn to our intrepid captain.
A living
at 171. I think he's starting to wear out a bit. Go ahead.
A living example of the previous Mishnah from the town of, from the pressures of Jerusalem to the quiet passive, pastoral life in Eilat.
Hakol Malin LeEretz Yisrael. Now, Hakol Malin does not mean anybody in the family, as we'll see. It means that any person can insist that all of the people in the home make Aliyah with them. So that means Malin Hakol LeEretz Yisrael is the way that the Gemara is going to understand the ribuy of Hakol in the end. The Ein Hakol Motzin, you can't force any of them to leave Eretz Yisrael. Same thing is true about Yerushalayim. You can be Malin your entire family to Yerushalayim, but nobody can force any of them to leave Yerushalayim. And this is true whether we're talking about the men or the women. Whoever wants, a wife can force her husband to make Aliyah. And if he refuses to make Aliyah, they'll have to pay her ksuba. Right? Now, this, of course, is also nogea, other issues, financial issues, because what we've been talking about so far is the assumption of where are you going to live when you get married. So over there, we were talking about the woman has to have access to her family and so on and so forth. It goes according to your original lifestyle, quality of life, and so on. But what about the payment of the ksuva? So remember that in those days, me'azuz were not worth precisely the same amount of money in all places. It would be like saying, giving a ksuva for $200. Is that Canadian dollars? Is that Australian dollars? What kind of dollars are we talking about? And if you're talking about a ksuva written by someone like Barnea, I mean, he could be in Kaputkia for that matter. You never know where he would have written out a shtar. And he can claim, there we go. There is Barnea's Kaputkia, keys to the city, undoubtedly awarded him at the engagement of a granddaughter while he was in Kaputkia. Some kind of interesting situation like that? Something like that. Okay. So now suppose you go ahead and you get married in Eretz Yisrael. And you get divorced in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, over there, both the payment and the original she'ibud are meant to be seen in terms of the context. How about if you got married in Eretz Yisrael and you divorce this woman in Kaputkia? So then you pay her according to the place where you were mishabed your money. How about vice versa? You married a woman in Kaputkia, and you divorce her in Eretz Yisrael, then you can give her the lower dollars that were in use in Eretz Yisrael. Now, that's a contradiction, and the Gemara is going to point out the contradiction. Do you go according to the payout place, or do you go according to the issuance? Shimon ben Gamliel says no. In that case, you have to pay her in the coins that you originally wrote the ksuva with, and that was in Kaputkia when you wrote it out. If you married a woman in Kaputkia and divorced her in Kaputkia, so then for sure you pay her in Kaputkia coins. So let's go back to the mission. Hakol Malin. When you say Hakol, you could drag everybody. What do you mean everybody? Who's everybody? It means even Avadim. So let's say somebody is an Eved Ivri. This is how Rashi understands it. And he's not part of your family. But nonetheless, you can bring along even an Eved Ivri. And what about, according to the Girsa in the Mishnah, that it says Avadim? Apparently there was such a Girsa. So then what is Hakol coming to be? Marva? Even from a beautiful home in Lakewood to a poor quality home in Eretz Yisrael, even so, you could drag everyone to Eretz Yisrael. And when it says, but you can't force anybody to leave, who is anybody? Anybody means even an Eved Knani who ran away from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, and you want to take him back. The Beis Din tells the owner, listen, the guy is here in Eretz Yisrael, and here he remains. So therefore, you can sell him, but he has to remain here because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Hakol Ma'alin LeYerushalayim. What is that? And coming to add, that means that even from a high-quality dira in Bet Shemesh to a low quality dira in Yerushalayim, you can still force them to come. What is that coming to include? So why, asks Tosfos, doesn't that include the case of the Eved? And the Rabbeinu Tam says an amazing answer. We don't want Avadim in Yerushalayim. We want Yerushalayim to be filled with high quality people. And why in the world would we tell someone, leave the Eved available in Yerushalayim? No, we are racists. Fine. So then what is Enako Motzin coming to tell me? You're offering a beautiful house. And, well, obviously, no. I mean, we already know that you can force to move to a lower quality house. So how would I think that I could tell someone, listen, you come with me to Beit Shemesh and we'll have a house three times the size. I know already that the opposite way I could make him come to Yerushalayim. That's true. We're just keeping it parallel. Because I did a ton of reisha, ein motziin, tana seifa, kein motziin. Now, how about if we have a classic situation? Tana rabban. The man wants to go and make aliyah. He omered, no, I'm not ready to make aliyah. My parents live here and so on. So the din is, we could force her to go up. And if she refuses, then she has to accept the divorce and she does not get a ksuvah. If she says, let's make aliyah, and he says, no, we force him to go. And if he refuses to go, then he has to pay her ksuvah and give her a divorce. If she wants to leave Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, and he says, absolutely not, we force her not to leave. If she still insists on leaving, she can leave everything she has behind. She doesn't get her ksuvah. If he wants to go to Chutz La'aretz, and she says no, we force him to stay. And if not, he has to pay her the ksuvah. And then we spoke about where it is that you pay. What coinage do we pay in? Isn't this a contradiction? First, you say if you get married in Eretz Yisrael and divorced in Kapotkia, you pay her in Eretz Yisrael coinage because that's where you wrote the ksuvah, which means that apparently Alma bat Shibud Azlinan. You go according to where the Shibud was incurred. And then you say that if you married in Kapotkia, which ought to mean that the ksuvah was in the higher quality dollars of Kapotkia, the Girsha be'Eretz Yisrael, that then you pay her mima'ot Eretz Yisrael, which means that you pay according to where payout town is. Amar Rabbah, you're right. It is a contradiction. However, this is one of the kulei ketuvah. We taught a din, shonukan, of the dinim of kulei ketuvah, where since ketuvah is only derabbanan, remember this was a machlokas before, but kasava ketuvah derabbanan, so therefore the rabbanan, when they were miyaseh, the din of ketuvah, they said we should go lakula in terms of payment. So whatever payment is smaller, whether it's in the terms of the shibud or whether it's in terms of the payout place, that's where you go according to. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, however, he argued and he said, no, if you marry in Kapotkia and you get divorced in Eretz Yisrael, you have to pay her Kapotkia dollars. But that's because Reb Shimon holds that the kesuvah is the araisa and the mele there are no kulei ketuvah. In terms of, and we've seen many times already, that the relationship of the ketuvah teaches us how to deal with business in general. So, Tana Rabban, what about shtarchov? So, amotzi shtarchov al chaveiro, it goes according to the locale in the contract. So, let's say the contract has signed this day in the town of Bavel. So, then the ma'ot are all in terms of Babylonian money. If it says Eretz Yisrael, it's in terms of Palestinian money. If Katuv bo stam, and then it depends where you presented the contract. Hutziu bebavel, you're collecting Bavel money. Hutziu be Eretz Yisrael, you're collecting Eretz Yisrael money. How about if a contract specifies silver, 200 silver? Now, it doesn't say silver what? Silver dollars? Silver quarters? Silver nickels? Are we talking about zuzim? What type of zuzim? Well, mashir tzilova magbeil. The borrower can pay the guy back whatever he wants. He can even use isarim. You want to be motzi mechavero? Prove it. In the contract, it doesn't say anything. None of this is true about a ksuvah. What? What isn't true about a ksuvah? Omer Mishash, I mean, the first thing, what it's talking about over here is that it goes according to where it says on the contract. That's not true, except according to the what we said over here, Zlav Flu came into Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabbanan are the ones that are Koveya over here against Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And therefore, even if the place is Eretz Yisrael or Kaputkia, it wouldn't matter because only Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says we would go L'chumra. Okay, getting back to the bride. So you said if it says silver, without saying what kind of silver, you could pay him in any coin you want. But how do you know that it means a coin at all? Maybe it's referring to ingots of silver. Because, I mean, when you talk about silver, you're talking about silver as a metal. And silver as a metal was usually sold by nazcas, which are ingots. They're like bars of silver, standard bars. Rebbe Lezer, no, it says coinage. Okay, so if it says coinage, so maybe it means you can even pay him prutot, even though pruta is even in copper. Give him the silver equivalent as 100 pennies. No? Amrif Papa, no. People don't make prutot out of silver. So if you specify silver, it's got to be the smallest silver coin, not the equivalent silver to a small copper coin. Sorry. Tana Rabbanan, once we're talking about the Mila of Eretz Yisrael, Lo Olam Yadur Adam Eretz Yisrael Afilu B'Yir Sheruba Ovdei Kochavim V'Al Yadur B'Chutz Haaretz Afilu B'Yir Sheruba Yisrael. You should live in Eretz Yisrael even if you're living with a bunch of goyim. Better than living in Chutz Haaretz in the Gir HaTorah where everybody is Jewish. Shekol Hadar Eretz Yisrael is considered to have a god. But anybody who lives in Chutz Haaretz, he doesn't have a god. So I'm giving you Eretz Canaan so that I can be your God. You're kidding. You don't have a God? I thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the God of the whole world. Now we're saying he's only functional as a God in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this is like, what are you saying? Kol she'eino dar ba'aretz ein lo Eloha. No, what it means is that it's as if he's rejected God. That's the point. So Omar lecha kol hadar b'chutz la'aretz, he's committed himself to being oyved avedes kechovim. It doesn't mean, so like we saw, that it's like it says in the Tochacha. It says that you're going to be eitz ve'evan, right? It doesn't mean literally that you will be oyved, but it means because of the fact that that's the society and that's who you're paying taxes to and that's who you've got to believe their system of values. And you might as well be going to church. So what happens is your shuls turn into churches. We see that David HaMelech says that. So this is what my enemies have done. They threw me away from Eretz Yisrael, telling me, go worship Avodah Zarah. What? Somebody told David to go worship Avodah Zarah. By forcing David HaMelech to go to these crazy places where he had to hide out with these goyim to protect himself in Chutz Laaretz, it teaches you that that's the equivalent of telling him, go and be Oved Avedes Kechavim. Now, Rabbi Zeira, he was dying to make Aliyah, and he refused to be seen by Rabbi Yudah because he knew that if Rabbi Yudah grabs him, Rabbi Yudah says, you know, you're not allowed to make Aliyah from Bavel. That's all I need. So he never wanted to be seen by Reb Yudah. He used to hide out all the time, maybe to listen from the back to the shir, but he didn't want Reb Yudah to see him. Because Reb Yudah, he was Boil HaMesek L'Eretz Yisrael. And Reb Yudah said, Kol HaOlam miBavel L'Eretz Yisrael over Ba'aseh. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Bavel HaYuvau V'Shama Yiyu. You have to stay in Bavel. Ad Yom Pogdil Tzamnu Mashem, until I bring them back to Eretz Yisrael. But if you come back to Eretz Yisrael without being told by Hashem, you're going to be over on an asay. More of this argument and all of the beautiful psukim and the shvuas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes us swear about the Golus and all of the contemporary political issues that have grown up from all of this amazing, very, very contemporary sugya. We will see Bezrat Hashem tomorrow. Quite an amazing day.